Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
The Technion Israel Institute of Technology is where some of Israel's brightest minds ask the biggest question of all. What if? What if they could take on the world's biggest challenges? What if they could develop life-changing environmental, scientific, health, medical, and technological discoveries that will make a huge impact on Israel and the planet? But they don't just ask the question, they answer it too. They turn those ideas into reality. They make them happen. To see just some of the incredible things they've achieved, get the Technion Booklet of Wonders at ats.org/wonders. We hope it inspires you to give them your support so they can keep doing what they do best. The American Technion Society. World-changing discoveries by Israel's brightest minds, made possible by you.
Hey listeners, it's Mishi. Last week we released our 50th wartime diary. This week is Yom HaZikaron and Yom HaAtzmaut. And as a way of marking this milestone, and these dates, Yochai Meital and I will have a series of onstage conversations in New York and Cleveland. We'll discuss the process of creating wartime diaries, talk about some of the challenges we've encountered, the dilemmas we've had, the insights we've gained. So if you want to hear what covering the evolving story of this war has been like for us, we'd love to see you at one of our events. All the details are on our site, israelstory.org. And meanwhile, wishing us all calm and peaceful days ahead. So you might remember that our last episode, part one of our mixtape miniseries, ended with quite the cliffhanger. We were in 1968, and Uri Avneri, the young and provocative left-wing politician, suggested replacing Atikva, the national anthem.
Uri, what led you to suggest changing the Israeli anthem?
Well, I detest the Israeli anthem, because the anthem has nothing to do with Israel. It was composed by an unimportant poet, and it is about Jews somewhere abroad who are longing for the land of Israel. It has nothing to do with people in the land of Israel. I don't turn to the east because I live in the middle. In the east, I'm looking at Jordan or India or China. It is a completely irrelevant song. Irrelevant to a state in which we have two different populations, the Jewish and the Arab. And I'm for many years I'm thinking about the need to get rid of this anthem and have a real Israeli anthem.
And his proposed new anthem was pretty surprising, coming from a lefty like himself. It was the unequivocal anthem of the Six-Day War, Yerushalayim Shel Zahav. Here's our mixtape band's rendition of it.
אשר בדד יושבת ובליבה
של נחושת ושל אור, הלא לכל שירייך אני כינור. ירושלים של זהב ושל נחושת ושל אור, הלא לכל שירייך אני
I'm Mishi Harman, and this is Israel Story. Israel Story is brought to you by PRX and is produced together with Tablet Magazine. Today we bring you part two of our mixtape miniseries, Iron and Gold. In this miniseries, we're telling the stories behind some of Israel's most iconic tunes. Stories that reflect the intricacies of Israeli society, the complications that are inherent in it. And in this episode, we go back in time more than half a century, to a month that, in a very real manner, shaped the way Israel looks till today. Okay, so Naomi Shemer's Yerushalayim Shel Zahav, or Jerusalem of Gold, which you just heard, was the song Uri Avneri wanted to fashion into the national anthem.
So I proposed it, and the Speaker of the Knesset told me that before he brings this bill, which I proposed, to the Knesset plenum, I need to have the agreement of the author, of Naomi Shemer.
Uri met with Naomi to discuss the matter, but his proposal never made it to the Knesset floor. Hatikva was spared. Still, even today, and despite his objection to much of its content, Uri is convinced that
Yerushalayim Shel Zahav is an anthem.
And in a way, he's right. The song is probably the most recognizable and beloved Israeli tune ever. Time and again, it's voted the most important song in Israel's history. Here's Leli Shemer, Naomi Shemer's daughter.
Maybe it sounds like a prophet that comes before the king. It's something very, very majestic about it. I don't know. It's all over the world. It's not only Jewish people. I can't explain it. There is something about this song that is magical.
It's a song that built two musical careers of two modern-day Israeli prophets. One a prophet of hope and optimism, the other a prophet of gloom and despair. And if Yerushalayim Shel Zahav has reached such an iconic standing, so has its creator, Naomi Shemer.
For me, Naomi Shemer is part of, you know, of my being Israeli.
That's Moti Zeira, Shemer's biographer. He and many others, really, feel that Naomi is a personification of a certain kind of Israel, a desired and longed-for Israel, of Eretz Yisrael Hayafa, innocent, beautiful, and simple. Naomi was born on Kibbutz Kinneret, on the shores of the Sea of Galilee.
Her parents were pioneers and very, very idealistic people.
And she represents something that is very from here. Her writing gives a very unique melody or sound of Israeliness. You can smell the, you know, the fields of Kinneret. It's the ideal sabra.
By early 1967, Naomi was already a well-known songwriter. She was 37 years old, and having left both the kibbutz and her husband, she and Leli were living in Tel Aviv. But in the small, relatively poor state of the mid-60s, it wasn't easy for a single mom to pay the bills.
And as a girl, I knew it. She explained it to me. It was part of my life, that it's not easy.
Which is why Naomi was very happy when, in February 67, she received a commission for a new song from Gil Aldema, the musical director of Festival HaZemer VaPizmon. This annual festival/pop music competition took place on Yom HaAtzmaut, Israel's Independence Day, in Jerusalem. It featured an accompanying symphony orchestra, and it was a big deal. There was no TV yet in Israel, but the festival was broadcast live on the radio, and the winning songs often became national hits. Gil told Naomi that Teddy Kollek, Jerusalem's then first-term mayor, had approached him with an exciting idea. While the votes for the songs participating in the competition were being tallied up, the audience would hear a few bonus tracks, new ones, written specifically about Jerusalem. Gil asked Naomi whether she wanted to give it a shot.
And she thought it would be very, very easy for her to do it, because she loved Jerusalem. Jerusalem is part of her biography.
But when she actually sat down at the piano, she struggled. How, she wondered, could she possibly capture the holiness of a city that generations upon generations of poets and bards had been writing about for nearly 2,000 years? She even went up to Jerusalem, a divided Jerusalem, and took in its sounds and smells. That didn't help either. But just before she gave up, she remembered an old Talmudic tale she had studied as a schoolgirl. The tale of a piece of jewelry that Rabbi Akiva had given his wife as a way of saying thank you for encouraging him to study Torah. The piece of jewelry had an etching on it, of Jerusalem.
Jerusalem of gold, Yerushalayim shel Zahav.
In 24 hours or something, she wrote it and she gave it to Gil Aldema.
Gil Aldema died in 2014, but he was supposedly so moved just by the sheet music Naomi had sent in that he burst into tears.
She wrote a song very, very personal about her childhood, about her memories, about what she remembered from school, about a Jerusalem of gold.
She continued to tinker with the song. And when she was finally satisfied, she invited some of her closest friends over to her apartment to hear it.
And one of them was Rivka Michaeli, her friend.
We were close friends, really close friends. My name is Rivka Michaeli. I was born in Jerusalem. For my mother's mother's side, I'm ninth generation in Israel, in Palestine.
Rivka is a famous entertainer, actress, and singer. At the time, though, she was one of the country's leading radio broadcasters.
It was very moving when she sang it. And then I said, you know, both my parents were born in the old city, and my father, he dreams about the old city all his life. Every night he is in the old city.
Rivka told my mother, Naomi, the song is not complete. Something is missing. What about the old city? And then she added the important part. Eichai avshu borot hamayim, kikar hashuk reika, ve'en poked et har habayit ba'ir ha'atika.
How have the cisterns dried up, the line goes. The marketplace is empty, and no one frequents the Temple Mound in the old city.
It's talking about the emptiness of the old city.
Now, remember that this is all before the Six-Day War. And while Jerusalem's old city certainly wasn't empty, as many critics of the song have since pointed out, it was empty of Jews, It was part of Jordan. In any event, once the song was ready, Naomi and Gil began looking for someone who could sing it at Festival HaZemer VaPizmon.
And that's how I'm in the story again.
A few months earlier, 11-year-old Leli had been listening to a young talent show on her transistor radio.
And then I hear a voice like bells, like John Baez with a guitar. And I called my mother, "Ima, boy, this is the sound that you like. Look how she sings, how beautifully, how like something from abroad, but so Israeli." And my mother said, "Take a paper and write her name down, please." And I wrote Shuli Natan.
Naomi kept that little note with Shuli's name, just really in case.
Maybe she will need it someday.
And now, that day had come.
And my mother told Gil Aldema, "I have a name of a singer. She's very, very young. I think she's a soldier in the army. She's maybe 19. Please find her for me."
Dutifully, Gil did just that. He found her. Sergeant Shulamit Natan, who was serving as a Morah Chayelet, a Hebrew teaching soldier, near Kiryat Gat.
"Well, my name is Shuli Natan. I was born in London and arrived in Israel when I was 2.5 years old."
Needless to say, Shuli was completely unprepared when, on a cold winter day of February 1967, she was summoned to the offices of the regional council, where her mother was on the line. She was sure something terrible had happened.
"And the first thing my mother said, 'Shuli, don't worry. Nothing terrible happened at home, but sit down on a chair.' And she said, 'Naomi Shemer wants to meet you.' Luckily, I sat on a chair because I was so shocked."
On her first vacation from the army, young Shuli went to see the balladeer from Tel Aviv.
"And there she sat on her piano and she played strongly a song for Jerusalem. And she said, 'I don't want the orchestra to play with you, just you and the guitar.'"
Plucked out of total anonymity, Shuli began practicing for what could be her big break, her brief moment in the national spotlight.
"I thought it would give me some exposure, but no more than that. So I had no expectations, and everything came as such a surprise."
The period leading up to the festival was extremely stressful. Gamal Abdel Nasser, the president of Egypt, was amassing troops in the Sinai, and Israel too began mobilizing forces and calling up its reservists. A menacing scent of war was in the air. And in the middle of all this balagan, 3,000 people gathered in Binyanei Uma in Jerusalem to listen to pop songs. The songs that actually competed in the festival were a letdown. The paper the next day would describe them as third-rate imitations of the 1953 San Remo festival. But when the votes were being counted, Shuli, with her long black hair and white knitted dress, took the stage with her guitar.
Shuli Natan. Ushmo shel hashir, Yerushalayim shel Zahav.
I was very, very nervous, like a leaf in the wind, you know. I was very nervous. My main fear was that I will have a blackout and will forget words, but I didn't.
Shuli sang of holy places, of Jerusalem's glorious past and golden future.
It was like a prophecy.
It was different, it was shocking, it sounds like the bells of Jerusalem. It's almost a holy song.
It's a prayer, it's expression of hidden, mutual longing for something you can't touch.
And I think there wasn't a dry eye in the audience. When I finished to sing, first of all, there was a quiet. And then there was such applause. Unbelievable.
You could hear from the clapping hands and from the applause and everything that something is happening. It was like blowing the mind of everybody.
It's hard to explain magic, but it's true that there is magic in it.
At the end of the evening, Teddy Kolek, the beaming mayor, took the microphone.
And he said, "And I won, the soldier girl." He didn't remember my name even. "Who sang the song for Yerushalayim to come back and sing it again." Wow. And I was way back in the dressing rooms, and I ran with my guitar, which wasn't even completely tuned, and I ran on the stage, my heart beating, and I sang it again. And this time the whole audience, the whole crowd, joined me and sang together with me the refrain. The next day, it like flooded the country. It was played nonstop while they were recruiting the reserves.
My mother started to get letters and calls like nothing she experienced before.
Thousands of letters. Thousands.
One of those letters, Moti, the biographer, told us, was addressed to
Nomi Shemer, Yerushalayim Shel Zahav, Tel Aviv. and she got it. I mean, even the post, they knew where to send it.
The immediate impact of the song, the excitement around it, it was all unparalleled.
She was the sound of something collective. I mean, people didn't know what will happen. The reserve soldiers were already, you know, on the borders. The associations were all over about the Shoah, about the Holocaust. I mean, the question of whether Israel can still exist after the war was not so, people felt that it's not true.
In a nation preparing for war, Nomi's uplifting words struck a chord.
And it became the song of everybody. Everybody.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Among the thousands of reservists waiting around for war to break out was a 25-year-old paratrooper called Meir Ariel. Here's his widow, Tirza.
They didn't stop putting Jerusalem of gold, Jerusalem of gold, Jerusalem of gold. You couldn't hear anything else in the radio except this song.
Meir was from Kibbutz Mishmarot, near Pardes Chana.
Just another boy who born on a kibbutz. Tractor driver.
And a few weeks earlier, on a Saturday afternoon, he had been called up for reserve duty.
I just remember it was just another day, and everybody jumped to the uniform. And me and Meir didn't have a baby yet. And Meir's parents came to our apartment. And I wanted them to leave. I wanted Meir to myself. I had to try to have a baby before he's going to the war. I cannot lose him. And he's looking. His looking was something like you can never meet in this world. Maybe there is some few that look not bad. But for me, he was everything money can buy, okay? I think I was the queen of beauty. And he was the King David. That's what I have to say. What was the question?
When the war broke out on June 5th, 1967, Meir's brigade had a historic task.
Meir was a tzanchan, parachuter. He was fighting in Jerusalem.
Meir participated in the Battle of Ammunition Hill, in which 36 of his fellow paratroopers were killed. He continued through Sheikh Jarrah, took over the Rockefeller Museum, and on the morning of June 7th, the third day of the war, he entered the Old City and reached the Western Wall. It was a moment of solemn jubilation. After nearly 2,000 years, the Kotel was once again in Jewish hands. In almost uncanny fulfillment of the dreams Naomi had expressed in her song. And there was really only one way to capture the magnitude of the moment.
The paratroopers in the Kotel started to sing Yerushalayim Shel Zahav.
Meir was probably one of those soldiers singing.
When they conquered Jerusalem, the whole country like had an orgasm from happiness.
But Meir was also hurting. He'd seen blood and pain. His friends had been injured and killed. And somehow Nomi's optimism, her romantic descriptions of returning to Jerusalem's old city, didn't fit what he had seen on the ground.
Meir was a soldier, just finished to see all his friends get killed and wounded in fucking gold Jerusalem. And he was thinking to himself, what gold you are talking about? What the hell? The song was wrong. The situation was a completely different chaos.
As a way of killing time, really, he took out a small notepad he used to keep in the front pocket of his uniform and wrote down new words to the melody of Yerushalayim Shel Zahav. Meir's version was called Yerushalayim Shel Barzel, Jerusalem of Iron. And it talked about all the things that Nomi's anthem didn't. Grieving mothers, mortar shells, thick smoke and spilled blood. To Meir, Jerusalem was no longer just a place of gold, bronze, and light, but also one of iron, lead, and darkness. Nomi's Jerusalem was a fantasy. Meir's was a battlefield.
He wanted to give expression to what he experienced in the war, and this was the vehicle to express it.
But he didn't think to do anything with it. It just that was for the soldier's friend he had when they finished something and they got together around a fireplace. They used to sing.
It was very easy. I mean, everybody knew the melody of Yerushalayim Shel Zahav. And when he performed it in his unit, so people, it expressed something that they felt.
Shortly after the war, there was a big official gathering of paratroopers at the newly liberated amphitheater on Mount Scopus. There were speeches, skits, and performances, all celebrating the unimaginable achievements of the war. And then, sort of like that scene in Forrest Gump, a soldier with a guitar on his back was pushed onto the stage. It was Meir, and this is what he sang.
Yerushalayim shel barzel v'shel oferet v'shel shchor halo lechomotayich karanu dror. שקייך ירושלים מצאנו לב אוהב את בנו להרחיב גבולייך ולמגר אויב ושחר קם פתאום. הוא רק עלה, עוד לא הלבין, הוא כבר היה אדום. ירושלים של בזל ושל עופרת ושל שחור, הלא לחומותייך קרה. ירושלים של זהב ושל עופרת מחלום, ליד בן חומותייך ישכון שלום,
For centuries upon centuries, alchemists have tried to turn iron into gold. And then came along a curly-haired kibbutznik, and with a few lines, turned gold into iron. When Meir sang, the same thing that had happened 3 weeks earlier at Binyanei Ha'umah happened once more.
It gave expression to something that they felt, as soldiers that just finished the war.
Here's Meir's son, Shachar.
The families that lost somebody in the Six-Day War are forever, in a way, in debt to my father for just saying that out loud. Because nobody else did, you know? No politician, no general, chief of staff. Nobody was talking about the fact that the price was so severe.
Rivka Michaeli, Nomi's broadcaster friend who had suggested adding the stanza about Jerusalem's old city, was at Mount Scopus, recording the event for the radio.
And after I heard this song, Jerusalem of Iron, I was astonished. Suddenly, the view of the war changed, and you saw it's not victory. It's blood, and it's smoke, and it's black. We knew there were young people that sacrificed their lives, but we weren't aware of it. We were so happy as a nation, and it was like popping the balloon when Meir came out with his song. How? Oh, ouch.
Rivka recognized Meir's talent. She went up to him and asked,
"What's your name?" He said, "Meir Ariel. Can you wait and I'll record this song?" And I recorded the song. And I broadcast it next morning.
It became a very strong hit, and it marked him as a protest singer.
Meir, the tractor driver from Kibbutz Mishmarot, was nicknamed Hatzanchan HaMizamer, the singing paratrooper, and thrust into the limelight.
Right away they make a record out of this song, and for a while it was running in the radio even.
What ensued was a copyright battle between Nomi and Meir, which was ultimately resolved, mainly in Nomi's favor. Meir was an unlikely hero. You see, he wasn't the anti-occupation rabble-rousing prophet he was later made out to be.
He loved Hebrew, and he loved this place, he loved Israel, and he loved the people. He was just a member of a kibbutz, nobody.
But suddenly, with this song, he was no longer nobody. Just like Nomi and Shuli, Meir had become a symbol. And he didn't like that.
We ran out of the country because of this song. Because they start to calling him the parachuter singer. And he couldn't stand it. And he didn't like people tagging him to this or that movement. He wasn't a left winger, he wasn't a right winger. He was talking about people. It was always about the people and about feelings. And we went for almost 3 years to the United States, just so they forget the parachuter singer.
But in the early 70s, Meir came back and launched a long career as a singer-songwriter. In 1999, he died of a tick bite-induced fever. Nowadays, he has an almost cult-like following.
Many consider him to be a prophet. He definitely saw beyond his time. A lot of people call him the Israeli Bob Dylan, and now some people call Dylan the American Meir Ariel, you know?
Naomi died of cancer in 2004, feted and celebrated in every possible way.
My mother is, I think, one of the very important figures in the Israeli culture. Her life were parallel to the life of the country.
So, while neither Naomi nor Meir are around with us today, their two songs live on. And even now, half a century after the dramatic month that birthed them both, they represent two different Israels. There's the idealized one, the one that hopes and yearns. And then there's the realist one, the one that says, no, things here are tough and painful. It isn't exactly right or left. Both Naomi and Meir somehow eluded those political labels. But it does say something about who we want to be. Pragmatists or dreamers? And that's our episode, part two of our mixtape miniseries. We're going to pick up next episode with the 1978 version of the same festival that made Yerushalayim Shel Zahav such a hit, Festival HaZemer VaPizmon. There, exactly 11 years after Shuli mesmerized the crowd, it was this guy's turn.
All right, I'm Isaac Cohen. What do you want? My age, shoe size, what do you want me to say? You just open the internet, you write Isaac Cohen, and you read everything about me. It's easier.
So, by all means, go ahead and Google him. But be sure to tune in next time for an episode which is all about the Oriental, or Mizrahi, music scene. Till then, you can catch up on all our past episodes, in both English and Hebrew, on our site, on iTunes, and on any of the other main podcast platforms. Also, if you want to help us grow and reach new listeners, please spread the word. Share your favorite episodes and stories on social media, tell your friends, your family, and sign them up to our feed. As always, you can also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all under Israel Story. And if you want to sponsor episodes of Israel Story, simply drop us a line at sponsor@prx.org. Thanks to Pamela Lavitt, Dana Pruchno, Lori Sehan, Michael Garnett, and Daniel Vital from the Seattle JCC. And to Elaine Cohen, Eric Siegel, and Esther Mazur at the Kaplan JCC on the Palisades in Tenafly, New Jersey. Thanks also to Sheila Lambert, Chanoch Piven, Naomi Schneider, Esther Werdiger, Wayne Hoffman, Shiraz Ariel, Moti Zada, Abi Levy, and David Broza. This episode was recorded by Russell Castellion and Josh Peel at the Dubway Studios in New York, and by Adrian Lau at the Off Record Studios, also in New York. Yochai Meital and Shai Satran edited this episode, and our favorite Sela Weissblum mixed it all up. All the original music throughout the episode, alongside the covers of Yerushalayim Shel Zahav and Yerushalayim Shel Barzel, were written, arranged, and performed by our wonderful mixtape band, Dotan Mushanov and Ari Wenig, together with Ruth Danon, Eden Jamshid, and Ronny Wagner-Schmidt. Israel Story is brought to you by PRX, the Public Radio Exchange, and is produced in partnership with Tablet Magazine. Our staff includes Yochai Meital, Shai Satran, Maya Kosover, Roy Gilron, Zev Levi, Ari Wenig, Hannah Barg, Rotem Tzin, Judah Kaufman, and Abby Neuschatz. A very warm welcome to our newest cohort of interns, who began last week, Pola Lem, Yoshi Fields, and Joel Shupak. I'm Mishi Harman, and we'll be back very soon with part three of our mini-series. So till then, Shalom, shalom, and yalla bye.
כרגיל מילים ומנגינה נעמי שמר, ושמו של השיר ירושלים של זהב. זה היה השיר ירושלים של זהב. והערב עוד ארוך. תודה רבה לשולי נתן.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.